check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, Van Lee fills in for Joe, and in place of the normal Joe, we bring in Joe Pisapia from the Fantasy Network. We dig into the third base position, debating similarly ranked players, as well as looking into targets, voids, and deep sleepers.
Fantasy jousting?
Joe left me mid sashimi.
I got live breaking news.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
With hashtag Shark Week.
Did you actually balance your checkbook?
He hasn't had a chance to suck yet.
I want somebody with some chest hair I can grip onto.
What are his weapons?
Shut up and talk.
Those boards don't work on water.
I'm the destroyer of burritos.
Be sure to cut all that out, Jesse.
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things.
This isn't a joke.
Eating ain't cheating.
Hello and welcome to episode 102 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. I am joined today first not by Joe Osachi, but instead by a much sexier man, Van Lee. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast, man.
Why, thank you. And yes, I can second that notion that I am, in fact, a much sexier man. And you can find me on at Manly Van Lee on the Twitter.
Very good. And we are joined today by a man who shaves his head for the sole purpose of gaining additional knowledge because bald men are smarter. Joe Pisapia, welcome back to the show.
That is absolutely a fact. That is the only reason, Nate, talking. I'm happy to be back here. Always enjoy talking baseball with you guys and really happy that we're finally turning the page from NFL. I think it's NFL's done. I'm good. It was a good season. It was fun. And now all I want to do is talk about baseball. In a weird way, it feels like it's never left. I've never felt like this in a very long time. I feel like the World Series just wrapped up pretty much yesterday in my feelings about baseball. So it feels like we're just ramping up, ready to go. Lots of very exciting things happening, and I'm ready to get to some fantasy talk, baby. Let's do it. Woo!
Yeah, me too. I mean, and I guess I made a mistake. I failed to introduce, of course, esteemed producer Jesse Jordan, who is, at least for the time being, joining us, unless his internet connection fails once again. So say hi to the people, Jesse.
Hey, oh, I didn't even, I couldn't match the excitement that Joseph Pisapia over here brought with the woo. So I decided to be boring.
That's fine. It's good. I like how you've taken the opposite tone. Yes, that's very good.
Someone's
going to play nicely when we listen back.
Exactly.
It's a real comedy tragedy thing going on. You've got to have both.
Exactly.
I'm just happy to be talking to semi-adults again. You know, when you have, you know, you're playing with your kids all day and taking care of them, it's nice to just talk to another adult. You know, it's the small joys in life.
Yeah, they probably don't even know what weighted on base average is to kids.
Yeah, idiots. Stupid kids learning their stupid numbers. And
yeah, that's the only way you're going to ever know sabermetric analysis. You should just jump them right into like algebra and statistics and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm already trying to evaluate the war of each child, you know, whatever, you know, whatever the replacement child for a foster care child would be, you know, they're higher or below.
Oh, man. There's a lot
it's not
that could
true.
Go into that.
I love my kids. I love them dearly. Any parent would know what I'm talking about. But
certainly,
nah, they're the best. And I am, as a full-time caretaker of them, I can tell you it's a joy. I'm very, very lucky. But it doesn't matter. They should definitely learn a little bit about the value systems and on-base percentage and all that stuff. I'm all for it. Let's do it.
And the best part is you really can't wait until they hit free agency and their contracts come off the books.
Yeah, that's the hard. Let me tell you, I don't think the contracts ever come off the books. I'm telling you right now, I got a bad feeling. This is like the Bobby Bonilla deal with the Mets. It's going to go on for the rest of our lives.
That's one of the best comps I think I may have ever heard as far as parenting goes.
You're free to use it. You're welcome.
What's your favorite child comp with MLB star? Email us, thefantasyamateurs at gmail.com. Or you can tweet at us, at Fantasy Amateurs is where the show is at. And hey, while you're at all that, go to thefantasyamateurs.com and get yourself a NastyCast t-shirt. And also, don't stop there. Please rate and review the show on iTunes as well. It makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Plus, it puts you in the drive. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to make the executive decision right now. If you leave us a five-star review on iTunes, we will ship you a free bag of Dots pretzels.
Whoa.
Wow. There you go. Big time. Big time.
I know. Yep. I've never met a person who can possibly refuse a bag of Dots pretzels, except for the very first person who won the week one drawing who refused a free bag of Dots pretzels.
I personally have left a five-star review on iTunes, and I didn't even get pretzels for it because this is long before. And imagine how good I felt then. Now imagine how good you'll feel if you do it now and you get Dots pretzels.
It's true. Who could argue with that?
Yeah. So, yes, and each week we will continue to be doing a drawing for that. And, of course, retweet the show link on Twitter to get yourself available for that. Let's see. I guess with that, we got a lot of third base to talk about. So we're going to start off with our first segment, which is entitled ADP Wars. All right, and in this first segment, we did this a little bit last year. Essentially, what it is, it's a preference between two players. We're pitting these guys head to head. They're similarly grouped in average draft position according to Fantasy Pros so far. So it's basically who would you prefer at this draft slot? And we're going to start off with you, Joe. Our first matchup is going to be Todd Frazier versus Adrian Beltre. They're both going right around that 76 mark. So between those two guys, who are you going to draft?
This is a tough one. This is actually the one that I struggled with the most because I just love Adrian Beltre so much. I mean, I know he's 38 years old. He and I are the same age, and I love the fact that he's still very good at 38 years old. I am not so good at 38 years old. I can tell you that right now. But I mean, look, you know, he's I mean, it's his, you know, fifth 3,100 season. You know, he's closing it on 3,000 hits. You know, the batting average is always going to be there. His second half was terrific. I mean, he was over 1,000 OPS in the second half. He had 320 in the second half. I think it really comes down to, you know, I know this is kind of a cop-out answer, but it's really not because this is what I do. This is what the Black Book is all about. And for me, it comes down to how your roster is shaping. If you're a team that, you know, you go the first couple rounds of the draft and you're lacking power a little bit, I would favor Frazier because Frazier, I think, is a better bet to hit 30-plus home runs without a doubt. I think he'll be a little bit better than even last year. I think he struggled a little bit in the early going, a little bit of change of scenery, a little American League adjustment. But I don't expect that to happen as much this year. But if your team is dragging in batting average, then to me, Adrian Beltre is definitely the way I go. If we're talking just overall players, like in a points league where everything just counts and money on the table, Adrian Beltre gets the nod for me because I like the consistency of Beltre. I like the fact he's getting on base always at a high clip. He's got different ways he can score points for you. So Beltre gets the slight edge because as much as I love Frazier, he's a little bit one-dimensional. I know he steals some bases too, and that's the big plus. That's a, you know, a little bit of a draw at times for the Roto guys. But, you know, 15 stolen bases is great. I can find that anywhere. Give me the 320 batting average. That's a little bit harder to come by.
Indeed. Van, what say you?
I'm going to echo Joe's sentiments here and say that a majority of these questions can easily be answered by team construction, how your draft has gone thus far. I think the biggest knock for me on Beltre is that he's 38. And I think if you look at maybe what's changed the most in baseball from, say, 10 years ago, is that you have to now be more quickly able to drop the older players. Do I think Beltre is going to fall off? No, but I absolutely think that he's got a much higher chance of it. In 2014 and 2015, he actually had less than 20 homers per season. Frazier's had average 34 over the last 3 years. He does have the stolen bases. I think I'm going to lean Frazier on this. He had a 40-point BABIP drop-off last year from his career average. I think the average can come back. It's not going to be anywhere near what Beltre does. But the fear with me is just that Beltre's advanced age, something's going to give. Do you want that to be this year, the year that you have him, or do you want to just stay it safe and go with somebody who ultimately is still going to give you a lot of value with Frazier, and you don't really have as much of a risk of drop off, at least by age anyway.
Yeah, you know, Beltre, I was down on him. He was really trending downward the last couple of years, and then, you know, last year happened, and he really showed no chinks in the armor for being as old as he is. Actually, upped his fly ball
percentage.
Hey,
easy, he's 38. I'm not old.
Of course, you shave your head to be smarter, not because it's fashionable. that's why Adrian Beltre does it too.
I guess so. He doesn't like when people touch his head either, which no. I'm actually the opposite. You know, especially a female. You touch my head, that's not bad.
Yeah, that's the goal. But yeah, with old people, you know, well, old Major League Baseball players, relatively speaking, you know, they tend to lose their fly balliness as they age. And 42% was actually up from what he did in the previous couple of years. And actually as high since 2011, that helped him hit those 30 home runs and good hard contact rate. It seems like he's still, you know, pumping away. So I really don't, I'm not as concerned about him falling off just this year. And for that reason, I think I'm going to take him over Frazier because I the average was just abysmal last year, and a 236 BABIP caused it, but I just don't know how much it's going to rebound. We talk about fly balls with Adrian Beltre. Frazier had a huge fly ball rate, almost 50%, 49% fly ball rate, and 18.5% of that was pop-ups, which is just an automatic out. So that's going to crush your batting average. He also pulled the ball 49% of the time, so teams are going to be shifting on him. So I don't think that BABIP and betting average is really going to bounce back that much. Harkening back to what you guys said about the roster construction, it definitely does fall into that as a tiebreaker. But overall, I'm just liking Beltre's stability more than Frazier's steals. So with that, we'll move on to our second matchup, and that is going to be Alex Bregman and Anthony Rendon. Bregman's ADP is 96.3 and Rendon's is 97.7. Ben, we're going to start with you here. Who you got?
Well, you know, Rendon is now sandwiched basically two fully healthy seasons between that one injury-shortened year. In that injury-shortened year, he did something that I really focus on, which is he walked a ton. He was still had a walk rate over 10%. I like Bregman. I think Bregman's going to be a really good talent. But is Bregman's ceiling really that much better than Rendon's? I think Rendon kind of has a bit of that stigma that like maybe a Justin Upton has of, well, he didn't become, you know, the number one at the position. So he's kind of held back a little bit in that regard. But Rendon's still a 20 homer guy. He can steal 10 to 15 bases or something like that. I don't know if I believe the injury stuff. I think he's mostly overcome that. And last year obviously showed that he can have another solid injury season. So I'm a little inclined to go to Rendon. I think in this day and age, and particularly with, you know, the hardcore baseball, fantasy baseball fans, we're more likely to see the shiny young prospect. And while, again, I think Bregman's an otherworldly talent, I don't know if it's worth taking the risk on him versus the stability and just, I mean, again, Rendon's awesome and he's still 25. Who knows if this is the floor for him? What's his ceiling? How much better can he even get?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just enjoying the healthy years from Rendon when they come. But, you know, even last year with the full season, you know, I was really high on Rendon last year at his draft slot, and I was pumping him up, and he did pretty much exactly what I thought he was going to do. But this year, third base is just chock full of talent, really, and I'm not sold that he's one who's going to stay healthy again for an entire season. And he actually, you know, he hit 20 home runs last year. That was good enough for a whopping 14th place among just third basemen in home runs. He didn't provide elite home runs by any means. The steals, maybe he'll hit 10, you know, double digits. I don't know if I'd necessarily count on it. But then Alex Bregman is pretty much a huge unknown, you know, only attempted 13 steals, so you're not looking at a ton of speed from him, and he's going to hit down in the lineup too, although it is a great lineup in Houston. But you know, they're actually pretty similar players, and I'm pretty amazed that the hype on Bregman isn't actually pushing him up higher than he is, right? I mean, maybe it will continue to inflate as we get closer to the actual drafts.
Oh, I think it's, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess as much crap as I talked about Rendon, between the two, I feel like he's got a little bit of a better floor. So I'm going to go with Rendon here, too. What about you, Joe?
No, I agree 100% with both of you. The floor of Rendon is definitely what I would be targeting there. I was very much pro Anthony Rendon coming into this year. I think people were worrying too much about the injuries. He's still young, and you know he's got time before he can really just plant that tag on him and say, well, that's a guy who's never going to work out. So I think that was just a little premature. I don't want to take anything away from Bregman here. I think he's a terrific young talent, guy on the keeper league scale that you definitely want a piece of. But, you know, I think whenever you're making those quick jumps, I think he tired a little bit by the time he got to the big leagues last year. He's a little fatigued and, you know, he was certainly able, you know, a 791 OPS, is certainly something strong. I'm looking at Bregman as a guy of like 2075, and I think that's very good. Not all that different this year than Anthony Rendon, but I feel like Rendon, I think I can count on a little bit more for those stats. I think there's a little bit more volatility with Bregman, and if I'm going to take a risk on a guy as a corner infielder, I think I would rather, you know, go ahead and do that with Bregman, and I think I can handle Anthony Rendon as a starting third baseman in a deeper league. Bregman I prefer in the corner right now, and if I really want to take a chance on a guy, I would take a chance on Ryan Healy a little later even than Bregman, because I think somebody will take Bregman a little bit too early this year.
Yes, he is. I really think that he will be one of the sleeker picks, and, you know, in a dynasty league, I do love Bregman, you know, so, you don't want to knock him too much, you know, it's just this season, you can't really expect too much from him. Our next matchup, though, a guy, actually, we're going to start off with a guy who, Nate Miller from the BG Baseball podcast, which I was recently on, go check that out. He said this guy, Miguel Sano, was his sleeper pick to lead the AL in home runs. So actually, Joe, were you over on that show or are you going to be?
Which one? I'm sorry.
The BG Baseball with Nate Miller and John Mpemba.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Actually, I'm going to be recording with those good gentlemen on Saturday night.
Ah, okay. There we go. Yeah. I had brought up your name when I was on their show last week, and he's like, oh, hey, he's getting around. Guess who we're talking to?
Yeah, that's me. I'm the Village Bicycle of Fantasy Experts. That's me.
Hey, as long as you're getting that head rubbed, everybody's happy.
That's what I'm talking about. How about them apples?
So, yes, Miguel Sano, whose ADP right now is 148, against Michael Franco. And I guess it's up to me to start this one. When you're looking at the landscape of third base as a whole, I mean, it's really deep, right? There's a lot of good talent at this position this year. And I think that the relative safety of Michael Franco batting average is going to be the difference for me between him and Miguel Sano. Sano could easily hit 200 and get demoted to AAA. Like, that is a likely outcome. The other possible scenario is that he does lead the American League in home runs or Major League Baseball because he has obscene power. It's just about harnessing that contact, trying to limit that strikeout rate a little bit. He's already got extreme patience, which that actually slipped a little bit. But I hope with, you know, new instructions with the new regime in Minnesota that Miguel Sano will improve, which he did not do last year. But, I mean, Franco, he's kind of a steal for me at this point. A guy last year, you know, he went 2580, I believe. Downside is the batting average still won't be great, safer than Sano. 17.1% pop-up rate last year, though. I mean, he's got to try to not get under quite so many balls because that's just going to tank your batting average. So, but I'll still take him over the dangerous Miguel Sano. So, Joe, who you got in this one?
Well, I think that what folks will miss about Michael Franco is they'll see those overall stats and not realize that there are definitely some red flags about him. The fact that he slugged under 400 at home is a red flag. The fact that he had a 637 OPS in the second half after an 813 mark in the first half. You know, I'm a big guy on splits. You know, that's something that means a lot to me. And I always like to dive into those and see what those stats are really all about. And, well, was it a case of Michael Franco in the second half getting figured out by starting pitchers who made adjustments to him and he didn't make adjustments back? Was it fatigue for his first full major league season? Could be, but we don't know which one those things are. I think when you're getting into this spot with these kind of guys, you kind of want the upside. And as nice of a player as Michael Franco is, and I think he is, like, he's a very good one. Something about Sano going back to his original position of third base this year, something about Sano's power upside, which is just enormous. You know, 2 years ago, he was basically lockstep with Chris Bryant. People forget that. And then last year did not go well, but nothing went well for the Twins last year. It was a complete disaster. So for me, I'm going to take the upside of Sano because I believe in him. I mean, as a prospect, he was a top three overall guy, and that's a guy that I'm just not ready to write off quite yet. And I think this is certainly a big make, not make or break year, but certainly the year where we go, okay, now what are you really, Miguel Sano? He's had that, you know, second year, sophomore slump, whatever you want to call it. Now this is kind of that make or break season. And most of the time, the guys like Sano who have that high end talent and potential tend to figure it out in year three. So I'm going to go with that, but it's not by a lot, but I definitely want the upside with Sano.
I do like that year three thing. That is something that I try to pay attention to. So that's interesting. We have a little bit different strategies here. So if we're talking about our first third baseman, that we're drafting, as opposed to like a corner guy or utility guy, would you still go with the upside versus the more stable guy?
Yeah, this is tricky. You know, it like Van and I were talking about before, it comes down to that roster construction thing. What do you need? You know, I'm always a points league guy personally. You know, I play in the season long roto and tout. You know, I hate head to head roto. It's my least favorite of all the formats, but I play that too because I try to play it all. But I think that overall, Michael Franco is the safer one. So I'll take the safer guy to start at third base. But man, oh man, if I already got third base filled and I've already filled with like an Arenado or a Donaldson or one of those, you know, top tier guys, I'm going to go double down, baby. Give me Sano. I want to, you know, win or go home. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's fair. And they're being drafted late enough where they're probably going to be a corner infield guy for you. Van, what do you think?
Yeah, first off, the thing I would say is if you're at the point in your draft where you're needing your starting third baseman and you're deciding it's between Sano and Franco, you've made a mistake in your draft. I think that the position is just too deep that you don't really need to put yourself in this scenario. And I'll come back to that later when we actually talk about third base ranking and so forth. Between these two, I think the easiest thing that you could say is this an OBP league? Yes, then okay, 100% it's Sano right there, hands down. If it's a batting average league, then maybe you have your question. I personally am not a Franco fan. I never really have been. If you listen to scouts and read the scouting reports, his whole skill set is based on his bat speed. And if that wavers slightly, you can see how it kind of falls off. I always saw him as if he succeeded, it was going to be a very brief window of success. I never saw him as a long-term guy. Just really didn't care for what I saw. Sano, even though he struggled last year, he did have, I think it was at least 100-point spread on his OBP. You're right. He does have absolutely insane power, and that could just happen. So his upside is so much higher than anything Franco could provide. I'm pretty much leaning on Sano. So if it's I already have a third baseman, I'm looking corner, I'm going Sano. If I don't have a third baseman and I just need a warm body that I know is not going to kill me, that's the only time I'm going to take Franco here.
It's cold bodies that are going to kill you. You got to watch out for those.
So let me ask this too. As a Minnesota fan and everything, you know, of course, in Major League, the whole concept of the movie is that the team owner wants the team to suck so that way they can move cities. Is that just what happens in Minnesota? Do they just all the prospects just get ruined? It's just a hot garbage mess down there, up there.
Well, that does seem to be the case, although they just built a new stadium, so it seems like poor planning. but no, I mean, they, like I said, I hope they just swap out every single like scout. Well, maybe not scout, but you know, every coach that they have in the minor leagues, especially. Well, either way, both pitching and hitting, because, you know, the pitching, obviously nothing has really, even Jose Barrios crapped the bed when he came up last year, but every hitter that comes up seems like they have absolutely no semblance of play discipline. They just swing at everything. That's the one constant that it seems like every player that comes up, you know, they all have that in common. So I really hope this new regime, they actually seem like, you know, they are not from the 1920s and, you know, they don't use radios and stuff. And they actually will know what they're doing a little bit. So I'm.
You want to hear a fun Minnesota Twins stat? this contract that they just gave Castro in the offseason, that's the most money they've given to a free agent from outside the organization in 20 years.
No way. Wow. Yep.
Wow. That's unreal.
Now, they've done a good job of keeping their own players and growing and signing them and extending them. But as a position player, not a pitcher, a position player, that's the most money they've given to a position player since about the year 2000 or so. And that is, I heard that on the radio today from a guy from the St. Paul Pioneer, was that Pioneer Press, right? Out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I heard that and I was like, wow, that's an incredible stat. And, you know, it's one of those nuggets that just stuck in my head. I couldn't believe it. But it's very telling, too, because, you know, the Twins have been one of those small market teams that's in the past grown their own talent, maintained their own talent, been very competitive, but they haven't been able to spend and haven't been able to bring in those outside people. And if they're going to start changing that tune a little bit, it'll help. They need to bring in some veteran presence guys to help these youngsters learn how to play the game. See, that's the thing. You know, they don't have a lot of good major league talent right now. So there's nobody up there to help them. You know, they always had that in the past. When young guys like Torii Hunter came up, they were guys ahead of him. When guys like Maurer came up, Hunter was there. You know, it's guys like that. You know, they really don't have a lot of that surrounding that organization right now. So right now it's a bunch of quad A and you know, over the hill or never was major league talent. And that's not really helpful. It's the JD Martinez syndrome, right? The guy who, you know, I kind of put Buxton in that category where, you know, it's not a matter of talent or ability, but man, it's really hard to develop a young kid at the major league level when he's got zero lineup support around him.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say how wrong you were because they signed Ryan Vogelsong for veteran leadership, but then you you went and qualified it with like quad A guys.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I like how you didn't say he qualified it with pitchers. You said qualified with quad A.
Yeah. I did. Oh. But I, you know, look, these things are cyclical anyway. And, you know, Sano, Buxton, Berrios, those are all guys that you just got to be a little patient on. And if they can really, you know, start to turn things around, all of a sudden that organization gets really good really quickly.
Yes, they'll also have a chance to sign some free agents in 2 years when Joe Mauer's contract is finally off the books. So anyway, getting back to our final ADP awards, we're going to start off with Joe on this one. Yulieski Gurriel at pick 316, going way deep with this one, versus Jurickson Profar at 319.5. What do you think, Joe?
You know, it's funny on my show last night, we were talking about Profar and, you know, I wouldn't mind him getting a change of scenery. If he does get dealt to the Rays or somewhere like that. I mean, he didn't get dealt there tonight, right? I didn't miss anything. Did I miss that? That didn't happen.
Nope.
No deal. All right. So if that happens, it's not that Tampa is a much better place to hit because it's not, but I think sometimes some guys just need a change of scenery. And I think Profar might be one of those guys that he just needs every day at bats at one spot. It's a very unfortunate. He has a lot of talent. Injuries really derailed his career, and they're getting bumped around from position to position. I just feel like there's no home for him in Texas. You know, that middle infield is solidified. I don't like him as a first baseman. There's no profile there. Now, Gurriel, on the other hand, this is a guy that you're actually not getting the best version of him. Gurriel is a guy that, you know, in Cuba, people would tell you, you know, 6-7 years ago, this was one of the best players in the Cuban baseball team, if not the best. But the problem is that was 6-7 years ago, and now he's 33 years old, question mark. Could be older. You never know with those guys. And, you know, we laugh, but it's true. You know, you're never going to really know. So for me, I look at Gurriel as probably being the little bit of the safer one because I think Houston made that investment in him because they want him to play. And I think that he's going to play. And as much as I want A.J. Reed to play, I think it's going to be a very tricky situation there. But, you know, they'll find at-bats with D.H. with first base. You know, maybe Gurriel will play third base too. Everybody will fly around the infield. You never know. Injuries can happen and change things. But I think Gurriel is the way that I lean just because I see the investment they've made in him. And I think from a baseball side, that's going to impact his fantasy value. Whereas Profar, I think, is a guy right now is still without a home. And I expect them to get somebody better than him at first base before they break for spring training.
Absolutely. Van, what do you think?
I want to take you back on a journey, if we could.
Ooh, I love journeys.
And that is, of course, of a time before Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. Before then, top prospects were top prospects. They were thought of as good players who could help your team. Then Trout and Harper come along, and suddenly everyone thinks the number one prospect is going to be Trout or Harper. Well, Profar was actually the guy the following season after all this happened. He was one of the number one top prospects. Everyone thought he was going to be amazing, but everyone forgot that he was also ranked so highly because of his defense. So that really kind of didn't play up into it. And so his whole career, I feel like there's a stigma around him of just him being this elite guy that just never made it. Well, he also wasn't really that good of a hitter. I've never really been that particularly enamored with him for that reason. I think, Joe, you kind of hit the nail on the head. When is he going to play? Is he going to play consistently? Stuff like that. We're at this point in the draft where, yeah, you probably want to take upside. But I don't know that Profar's upside is really even higher than Gurriel's. I'll go with Gurriel just because he's going to get the at-bats. And if he goes on a hot streak, there you go. You've got 500 at-bats out of a guy that was on your bench. And who knows, you can trade him for something later. You can keep him and he can fill in a hole. So I'm definitely going Gurriel on this. I'm just not that excited about Profar, and I never really was, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'll start off by saying that I'll go with Gurriel here too. But as far as Profar, like you said, you know, he came up as a defensive prospect, just elite defender, and now they're playing him at first base.
Right.
Like Joe said too, yeah, I mean, what a freaking waste. So he definitely does need a new team because the Rangers are just stacked everywhere. Profar has, you know, if he's not going to play first, he's going to be a, you know, utility player. So they need to deal him for some pitching, which, you know, they desperately need. When Martin Perez is your third pitcher, like, you're not going to be a playoff team. Even though they did pretty well last year. But anyway, that's beside the point. Gurriel, he will play, you know, so I guess I'll give him the hand there. But, I mean, if you're the Rangers, just to go back to them, Chris Carter's still floating around there. Mike Napoli, right? Wouldn't they do a lot better at first base? I don't know what the Rangers are waiting for.
I don't know that Chris Carter can ever be described as floating in any capacity. I hear what you're saying.
Are you saying he would sink? I mean, he will float your batting average maybe 20 points higher than a Joey Gallo.
Yeah, positive side.
Yeah, so we'll see. I have a feeling that by the time draft season really rolls around in late March, Jerickson Profar might have a different home. But we shall see. Anyway, let's move on to our targets.
I'm going to make your heart explode.
2017 third base targets. Van, I believe it's your turn. We shall start with you. Out of all the third basemen this year, what guy or guys have caught your eye?
I really like the top tier of guys this year. I mean, obviously you like the top tier of guys in any position every year, but for whatever reason this year, I'm just particularly enamored with them. I mean, the top four are Bryant, Arenado, Donaldson, Machado. I think if you can snag one of those, I mean, your team is immediately going to be in elite territory as long as the rest of your draft doesn't go terribly and you're not an idiot. I think if I'm looking in the early batch based on where they're going, I think Machado is actually going a little bit lower than he probably should. And Donaldson's dropping quite a bit because I think there's this narrative out there that, you know, with Encarnacion leaving, Toronto, blah, 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 lineup protection, which I don't believe in. Maybe the runs and RBIs are down, but I mean, I don't care. 40 home runs out of your third baseman. He's going to hit for average. It doesn't matter to me. He's going to be really, really good. So top tier, I'm kind of looking at that way. A little further down the list, Evan Longoria. He's now had four straight years of a 600-plus at-bats, and that's not plate appearances, that's at-bats, and shaking off that injury-prone tag. I'm not too afraid he's going to revert back to the low 20s home run totals. I think he was 22, 21, and then he hit 36 last year.
But if he starts hitting turtles, I mean, he's going to lose the crowd in a hurry.
Maybe just a bit, yeah. So I think he's
more... they've got a hard shell. They can take it. It's fine.
I guess.
They can take an Evan Longoria swat, that's for sure. Maybe not a Miguel Sano swat, but Longoria, sure.
I mean, if you're going to hit an animal, I guess it should be a turtle.
Wow. Getting the turtle bias out of Nathan here.
Well, I mean, like Joe said, at least they have a shell. I mean, if you're taking a bat to a little kitten, they don't have anything but soft little cute fur. So.
Hashtag turtle bias.
And then maybe just a little lower down the list, I'm pretty high on Nick Castellanos. He finally started to show some promise. He's always had that hit tool ability in him, And, you know, some guys just don't become stars immediately. They have to build up to it. He's still young. I think his price is super low. So those are kind of some of the guys I'm really looking at as far as targeting for my team.
Plus, Castellanos can dance.
Can he?
Yes, there's a video floating around out there from the Tigers Fan Fest that occurred recently where he's lip syncing to some boy band. I think it's Backstreet Boys, either that or NSYNC or whatever. He's all dressed up on stage. Pretty frightening, I've got to say.
Well, top five. And so, yeah.
Go check that out. A couple guys, I guess, that apparently I'm going to be the high guy on Franco. You guys both seem to not care for him too much. And the general consensus doesn't seem to be too high. So I think I'll be ending up with him quite a bit. And Jake Lamb is going for a pretty reasonable price. Yeah. 18th third baseman off the board for as much power as he showed last year. Obviously showed some chinks in the armor as the season wore on and pitchers sort of adjusted to him. But I think that he's shown that he's a good enough hitter where he can counter that, come back, and have a really strong year with the ADP that he's got going on right now. And then the last guy that I'll mention before we go on to Joe is Jung-ho Kang. That dude is just the total afterthought right now. Coming off the board at pick 263. I mean, he's facing a suspension of some sort, which I haven't heard anything yet when or if there's going to be. I mean, I would assume that there will be one at some point, but if he doesn't, I mean, he would easily be in my top 15 just because of the power that he's shown is ridiculous, you know, when he's healthy. But he's just such an unknown right now that I totally understand that's why he's being drafted so late. So just keep an eye on the news with him as we approach the end of spring training. So, Joe, what about you? Some guys that you're looking at to target this year?
Well, I'm on board with most of what you guys have said, but I'm going to have to take the opposite road on Castellanos. I absolutely hate him. and here's why. To me, he's not a profile of a power hitter kind of guy. I mean, just not physically. I'm not saying that he can't hit home runs. He can, but hitting 70 in the first half, to me, I think that was just a little over his head. I think there's a danger here where, you know, before the injury, he was trending in a very, very strong negative. I mean, everything was kind of falling apart. The other thing about Castellanos is he does not hit lefties. He hit 207 against lefties last year with an OPS at 656. I mean, that is dreadful. So when I'm looking at corner power guys, I would rather right at the same ADP go to a guy like Mike Moustakas, who corrected his troubles against lefties 2 years ago. Hit 280 against left-handed pitching. To me, that's a guy that could very well find himself on another team by midseason, also in a better lineup, in a better home ballpark. So for me, I look at a guy like Moose and I say, well, there's a 25-80 guy that I feel really strong about the power. I believe in it. Castellanos, I'm just not buying it yet. I just think there's too many inconsistencies in his game. And the fact that he just struggles so mightily against lefties, plus I said the wheels were really coming off there, and then he got hurt, and then we really never saw. I mean, I think if he had had a dreadful second half and that second half continued on the pace that it was at, I think people would have a different tone. But because he ended on, you know, you look at those numbers and it's a short period of time, there's that danger of extrapolating over a full season. The only guy that you guys did not mention, I think it's overlooked quite a bit, is Kyle Seager. Seager is probably one of the best values you could possibly get every year at third base, especially in season-long roto. He has his warts, he has his streaks, and sometimes in head-to-head formats, he'll drive you a little nuts. But Kyle Seager is a guy that you can just put it in an ink. He's going to hit 25 home runs at least. He's going to drive in at least 85. He's going to score at least 80. You know, his batting average is going to range from years to year. But let me tell you something. Kyle Seager is a guy that you just kind of, you know, put it down in ink. You leave him alone. It's all going to be there at the end of the year. And he's kind of, you know, he's going into his prime years too right now. So there could even be another slight uptick. That's a guy that just doesn't get enough credit, in my opinion.
Yeah, he is one of my favorite guys to draft because he never goes super high, and he is just a terrific foundation. Like you said, he never gets hurt. You always know exactly what you're going to get from him. And with Moustakas as well, that is actually what I mentioned in my key stats. If you go, if you Bucketeers out there in podcast land want to go check out my rankings, it's thefantasyamateurs.com. Go to my blog there. I did mention 354 and 356 is weighted on base against lefties for Mike Moustakas in 2015 and 2016, which is like you said, Joe, markedly better than he used to be against lefties. So he is actually, and he's going off the board really, really late as well. So we're going to stick with you, Joe. How about some guys that you hate? Who are you avoiding this year at third base?
Well, I think I just named one there. I think I just hammered Castellanos there. And yes. It's not because he's a terrible player. It's because I fear that people, again, they see that short sample. They see all the good work he did, but there is not enough examination of the negative end. And really, I mean, we've seen guys go on hot streaks like that. I mean, heck, you know, here's a name for you. How about Chase Headley, right? Chase Headley had three good months of a career and turned that into millions of dollars and turned that into a few years of fantasy favor with owners. And I think well past when it should have been. The guys that I red flagged this year in the black book, I red flagged Gong because not of his talent, but because of these weird situations going around with him. These sexual assault allegations and the drunk driving things. And it seems like he's a guy that's got a lot of troubles. And I'm not against taking him late in the draft, but he strikes me as one of these guys that could face a suspension. He could miss time because of his extracurricular nonsense. And those things are always a little, bothersome to me. Suarez is another guy that I think you got to look into the splits a little bit harder. He was just a 240 hitter with a 377 slugging against right-handed pitching. I mean, you can't slug 377 at a corner spot against right-handed pitching in my world. I mean, as a DFS play, Suarez is all right, but that's another one you got to take a look at and certainly put a big X on. And the other one, too, that I think at this point is David Wright. I think anybody who's, like, thinking that they're going to have David Wright bounce back or Chase Headley be useful. Right. I mean, that's got to go. I'm curious what you guys have to say about Sandoval personally.
Who cares? It would be my thing about Sandoval.
But he's skinny now, Van. He's skinny. I mean, that's going to change everything, right? Well, not every year. Last year, he looked like he ate Hanley Ramirez and Manny Ramirez.
Sandoval. Yeah, he made my top 30 right at the end, at number 30. And my key stat for him was 275, which is the over-under on his weight right now as he is in the best shape of his life.
Well, that's the thing. You just want to, for Pablo Sandoval to just hit his weight, that's not bad. Oh. He just wanted to hit his weight.
That would be impressive.
Yeah. I mean, crap, it would be a nice 285.
All right, Van, who are you looking to avoid this year?
Well, I want to point out, too, that, first off, Eduardo Nunez, why bother? I just have no interest in that. I don't think any of it was real. I think he just did something and it worked out. So that's a guy that I think the risk you're taking in hoping that he resembles what he did last year in any semblance is just not worth it. There are too many other options. So that's a big guy that I just have, no thanks towards. On the other end, a guy who succeeded, but for whatever reason, something just strikes me, is Justin Turner. He was kind of a late bloomer, of course. I think he's 32 now. He just turned 32.
Do you have something against people who wear bloomers, man?
Usually that's a positive in my regard. But in this case, I don't know. Just something about Justin Turner I don't care for. I'll pass. Like I said, this is a theme I'm having with third base. I think it's a deep position. I think there are enough guys out there that you can take something that might give you a little more value than your pick would be, which is ultimately what we want to do as fantasy players. You don't necessarily want to draft just to get okay. You need that occasionally, but for the most part, you want to draft and see if you can get bonus value. And then lastly, it's not really an avoid, so let me clarify that, but because he's still a great pick, but I have never been the biggest fan of Nolan Arenado. And prior to last year, his best walk percentage was 5.4 in 2014. And the theme you find about guys I watch are that if they don't walk, when they slump, they really slump. Do I think Arenado is going to be outside of the top 10 next year? Probably not. But when he starts to slump, when the chips in the armor, the chinks in the armor start to show, I think he's going to plummet. I don't think he's really going to slowly fade. And that's simply because of the walk percent. And I really don't believe last year's was true because it was just this big burst in the first half. And then he normalized and kind of fell out. So I would take him absolutely with a top pick, but that's a guy that maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but in the future, you still have to keep an eye on him because it's slowly going to happen. And then just boom, I think he's going to be a mid-tier guy at best.
Man, that is quite a contrary stance. You and you and Evil Joe, you know, Joe Osachi, the normal Joe who's on the show, you guys hate Nolan Arenado for some reason. I think that, you know, between Coors Field and a good lineup, he's pretty safe.
How can you hate Nolan Arenado? He hits 40 home runs every year and drives at 130.
Well, and that's the point, too, is, I mean, okay, I didn't for once believe the 42 home runs that happened the year before last was legit, and then he redid it, so I kind of had to tuck my tail between my legs a bit. I thought of him as a 25, 26 homer guy. He clearly has more power than I ever would have guessed. I just, and I'm, again, I'm not saying I hate him. I'm just saying that's a guy that at some point in my life, I'm going to point and go, see, that may not happen now.
Well, you know, when we're 37, it happens to all of us, you know, at some point, you know, but I'll take him until then. I understand some people fear the Coors factor with some of these guys, but as long as that's in play, he's still a very good player on the road, and he is an extraordinary player in that building. So for me, it's a no-brainer for me. I actually have Arenado above Bryant, and that's a controversial thing. But although Lore Michaels agrees with me, we had him on the Black Book show the other night, and he and I are on the same page on Arenado, too. It's just that it's that consistent RBI and home run production, the high batting average and all of that. It's just all of those things are just so fantastic. And, of all the top-tier guys, you know, I actually feel at third base, that's the one that I feel best about because Manny Machado's knee can always be in question. It's destroyed his speed. Bryan had a great year, but I think there'll be a little pressure on him to repeat. And then you got Donaldson, and I think people are reading way too much into the Donaldson, you know, well, there's no Encarnacion, what's going to happen? I'm like, Donaldson's going to be fine. I mean, look, if he hits 35 instead of 40 home runs, boo freaking who, you know what I mean? Like, who cares? Arenado to me is the safest of that top tier.
Yeah, Van, you've got the cojones because you're on the island over here. Because actually, Joe, I actually have.
That's good. I love guys on the island, man. Usually, I'm the guy on the island, so don't worry about it. You go, you fight for that island, and you put your, you know, you draw that line in the sand. You put your flagpole in there, and it's Van's island. Go for it, man. That's what makes this fun. That's why we do this, right? To have these discussions.
And the guy that I'll point out that I was absolutely very, 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 very wrong on, and I'm happy to admit I was wrong because I love him as a player, is Paul Goldschmidt. I saw that guy swing. I saw everything he did, and I thought I had no interest in him. But he has such insane hand-eye coordination that he's unstoppable. He's such a good hitter. Now, I don't necessarily think the same thing about Arenado, but again, Arenado's good. I'm not saying don't take Arenado, but you're right. I'll be on my island over here because I'll take my island.
Finally, my third baseman of voids, already mentioned, Eduardo Nunez. I mean, come on, does anybody really expect that to repeat? Don't draft Eduardo Nunez. And then Hernan Perez, for some reason, people are still drafting him, even though he's going to be like a super utility player. He doesn't even have a position right now, and he's being drafted a scant 4 picks behind Ryan Healy, who I like quite a bit.
Oh, no way. Is he really? That's insane.
He is, and even in front of Yoan Moncada. So.
Oh, I got a Hernan. I'm like, come on, man. Practice?
We're talking about Hernan?
Talk about Hernan Perez. Talk about Perez.
Yeah, so.
Oh, man.
Don't draft Hernan Perez, please.
It's like, what's his name? Johnny Paredes. Remember Paredes with Jimmy Paredes a couple years ago? Like, remember that happened?
Yeah, we try not to.
I know. It's better if we don't. Let's not bring it up again.
Yeah. All right, so we'll go into our final segment here. We're just sort of mining for gold here. Joe, is there any guy who's got your eye as a potential impact prospect who might come up at some point this year, or even if he's not a prospect, just a real deep league sleeper who you might be targeting?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, I don't know. I think of all the guys, you know, in the minor leagues, or especially, you know, those dynasty leagues, the guy that I think might make the quickest run to the big leagues is Nick Senzel, the Cincinnati Reds. That guy is just, he's a beast, man. He hits the ball hard. He makes hard contact. He's a college bat, so he's got a nice raw power, but he's got an advanced batting eye. At A-ball last year, he hit 329 with a 982 OPS, so the guy wasn't wearing down at the end of the year. I mean, he's a physical specimen. To me, he's in that mold of those guys like Schwarber and Bregman that are going to be quick risers. Now, it's whether or not Cincinnati wants to start his clock or not. There's certainly nothing holding him back. So Senzel plays very well. He's probably going to start the year at Double A. If he just smokes Double A, there's a good chance that by midseason he's a Triple A and he could be up in the majors in August. I think that would be the best case timeline. But Senzel is the guy that in dynasty leagues and those deeper formats I would spend a couple bucks on. That's a guy that I would just be licking my chops to get in Great American Ballpark, which is very home run friendly. And this is a kid with just raw power.
Yeah. A guy who, you know, he, obviously the talent is there. Yeah. So it's just a matter of whether the Reds feel like they want to punch his ticket, which obviously they're not going to contend this year. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they do a Dansby Swanson kind of thing. But Van, anybody that you're looking at?
You know, I had Senzel on my list. I think Joe made all the great points about him. We've mentioned him several times, and he's not really that deep of a sleeper, but Ryan Healy, you've got to look at the guy. He performed. He's got the size and the shape, if you will, to perform. I think he's a good guy to target. I think way down the list is Javier Baez, a guy that, you know, I'm not that enamored with, but people with his skill set can provide these insane bursts of ability and be good for maybe trading or even, you know, filling a hole, that sort of thing. And then if there were B2 an injury to my nemesis, Arenado in Colorado, I think Ryan McMahon, who actually struggled last year, the Rockies prospect, he's kind of fallen down a bit on lists. I think he would be a good candidate because he's fallen down on lists to just get called up to fill a hole. So I think that might be a guy that, who knows, we could see what could happen. And the Coors factor is always there. So a couple of good names to kind of look at there.
Interesting. Sticking with Oakland, I think a name to potentially keep an eye on at some point is Matt Chapman. He's just a, you know, big, one of those big fat hitting machines. He had 36 home runs last year between Double and Triple A. However, he did have a 30% strikeout rate, and at Triple A in 86 plate appearances, hit just 197. So obviously, you know, you're looking at the case that Ryan Healy moves over to first base because he's a poor defender at third. Chapman is a good third baseman defensively anyway. So if he, you know, obviously, if he struggles right out of the bat, you're not going to get too much from him. But, I mean, real quick question. Can you guys name the first baseman for the Oakland Athletics?
Yonder Alonso?
You got it. I thought I was going to stump you guys. Yes, he is planning. He is scheduled to platoon with, oh, crap, I forgot his name. I should have pulled it up. Crap, somebody just terrible, and like I would be surprised if they just scrap that at some point and move Healy over to first and bring up Chapman. So he's a little experiment anyway to keep an eye on. Maybe if you're in one of those like NFBC draft and hold leagues, maybe that's a guy who you can take in the end rounds. And then, you know, Joe, you brought up Eugenio Suarez, who you disliked. I will play devil's advocate here just because he is going as the 31st third baseman off the board. He is going really, really late. So even though he doesn't hit righties, you know, he does steal bases and he does have some power. So if you're just in the dregs and you're looking for, you know, a guy, he, amongst the crap, I do like Suarez.
Well, right now, actually, they're showing that Trevor Plouffe is going to play third base and Healy is going to slide over to first full time. That seems to be what that's the early plan as of right now. So Yonder Alonso is a man without a position, could be a DH with all of those four home runs he might hit all year. Boy, I really hope he ends up as the designated hitter. Yes, that's what we want. More hitting from Yonder Alonso.
Moneyball.
Yeah, right. Moneyball works when you have Tim Hudson and Mark Mulder and Barry Zito. That's right. What it works.
Oh, salty burn.
Started on that. It's a great book, but let me tell you, man, that those guys, you know, Billy Bean made off a reputation off of a system built around, oh, wait, three of the best pitchers in that era at that time. You know, oh, wow, that was really hard. Jeez. And still never won anything. Never won a damn thing. Didn't even make it to a World Series. Just see, yeah. That's what happens when you're pretty. He's pretty. See?
Well, I mean, Brad Pitt played him. I mean, come on.
I know, right? Jeez, like Stanley Tucci maybe at best plays me in a movie, but he's older, so I don't know what the hell. Stanley Tucci.
Oh, man. No, you're going to be cast by the lead singer from Disturbed.
Oh, totally. I totally look like that guy, dude. I was like, that is definitely my doppelganger for sure. Like, either that or I'm a very short version of Mark Strong, who's like much, much bigger than me.
I have yet to find mine. Some people have said that I look like Nick Cage, which he's kind of psychotic, so I don't know if
you
that's a good
wish thing. You look like Nick Cage.
I forgot, Ben, that you have sort of a thing for Nick Cage.
Sort of a thing is putting it very, very lightly. I'm pro Nick Cage all the way.
Oh, Worthy. There's a lot of fun memes and such out there with his face as well, so endless fun.
Well, I mean, it depends, too. Like, you want to be like Nick Cage, like back in the day Nick Cage, or like Nick Cage now with like a million surgeries where he's starting to look like the Catwoman. Like, he looks a little weird right now.
My ideal Nick Cage is Con Air Nick Cage, because you
get the hair.
Put the bunny in the box. Yeah, put the bunny in the box is definitely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the flowing locks as well. Explosions.
He had a good run there. You know, my personal favorite Nick Cage is Raising Arizona Nick Cage. I think that's my favorite Nick Cage. That is just a great movie.
Nothing tops Wicker Man Nick Cage. That's all I'm saying. He's in a bear costume punching a woman in the face. Come on.
It's true. That's true. It's hard to argue. You can't argue with that. He had that nice run, though, with Face Off and Con Air. That was like the same summer, I believe, or like somewhere close to it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Pretty good run. I watched that. I mean, it was a good 10, 15 years or whatever after it came out, because it's just the epitome of a 90s flick. And I watched it again. I'm like, oh, man, this is so cheesy and just so 90s. It was just ridiculous.
So good, though. So great.
There's a lot of good. He was, I wish I remembered the name of the movie he was in, where he played the serial killer up in Canada, where he would kill prostitutes and bury them.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. That was a fun movie. For what it's worth, that was fun to watch.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
I cannot remember it. The name of it for the life of me.
Bangkok Dangerous?
No, that was not it.
No, not at all.
Family Man? No, just kidding.
Oh, man, that is driving me bananas. Really enjoyed that movie. Anyway.
A serial killer in Canada?
No, Alaska.
Alaska.
Yeah, it was legit, like based on a real story. He would lure these prostitutes out and then hunt them.
Frozen Ground? Is that what it's called?
Oh, I think that was it. Yeah, that's
awesome. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is
Frozen Ground. Yeah, I've never even heard of this one. Wow, just like scooted by. Yeah, 2013. So this is when I started having kids. So you start having kids, there's like a window that you miss in entertainment for a good couple years when they're infants to when they can walk. And there's like a window there. And if you have two kids, forget it. That's 3 years or 4 years in that window. So I'm just getting things back. Like in my last couple of years, I'm finally like binge watching things. Like I've never seen an episode of Breaking Bad because it just happened around that time. I know it's sacrilege. I know. I'm a horrible person. I'm well aware.
Where can we find all your horrible work, Joseph Pisapia?
God, it's hard not to find me. I would just, you know, God, I'm the worst. You can hear me every single day on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hosting every day, actually, On Target Fantasy at noon. Actually, just now it's going from noon to 1 to 11 to 1 Eastern every day. And we just won FSTA Radio Show of the Year honors.
Yes, so congratulations. Very nice.
I'm an award winner. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I want to thank the Academy. I want to thank God. I want to thank Nate Dawkins. So that's going to be on every day. It's myself, Benny Ricciardi, and Jake Seeley. Then every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 from 8 to 10, Dan Stratford and I host the Fantasy Black Book Show. That is good time shenanigans. So you can get you can listen for free too, which is great about fantasy radio. That is FNTSY radio app on iTunes. It's free and at the Google Play Store. Then you can also obviously get the new Fantasy Black Book 2017, number one in fantasy sports, yet again for the ninth straight time. Hooray! Yes, thank you. it is available on iTunes, available on Kindle, and actually for the first time you can actually buy the Fantasy Black Book and hold it in your hand on a paperback version. You can buy that on Amazon as well. If you have Amazon Prime, it's free shipping. We live in a beautiful universe where these things happen. And you can follow me on Twitter at JoePizzaPS17. And I'm very appreciative you asked me to come on. It's good to talk baseball. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Absolutely. So, Van, I mean, I should have asked you first. It's tough to follow all that. What are you doing these days?
Van, what are you doing now?
Idiot, what have you got going on?
I got an herb garden. I've been...
I like Nicolas Cage movies. you can find my written works at bootuinc.com. That's BOOTUINC.com. I write garbage, and it's great. you can also find my podcast, which is called The Backup Catcher. It would be great if I had my co-host doing anything, but eventually he just moved. We're going to get everything sorted out, so look for new episodes there. And that's pretty much all I've got going on now, aside from sounding really nasally and awful because I've been sick for a while.
Well, we hope that you're feeling better, Ben, and thank you for filling in for Joe. I dare say. Well, I mean, I did for many reasons anyway. You just gave me another one.
Sure.
Thank you, Van, for filling in for Joe, and thank you, good Joe, for joining us. So many Joes. Thank you for joining us again. So until next time, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.